This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 88, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, YouBuyNow.com, and the Netflix. Hello, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 88. I'm Ron, and I'm here with Connor.
Hello.
And unfortunately, Josh is taking a vacation, so...
He's far from internet service.
I hope he's enjoying himself. So, so for those of you who are old listeners, this is old news to you, but for our new listeners, this is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, where we talk about comics. At iFanboy.com, we love the comics, and we read them, and then every week on Wednesday, we pick the best comic that came out this week and write a review about it, and then we come here and we discuss it. But before we get further into the show, we just want to remind everybody that we're going to talk about what happened in the comics. So if you haven't read your comics yet for this week in July, first week of July, I would stop now.
Spoilers!
Exactly. And then come back and listen later. But if you already read your books, you know, come join us on a wonderful magical mystery tour of comics.
Aww.
So this week Connor had the pick, and he went a little patriotic on us, unfortunately.
Yeah, this week the pick of the week was Fallen Son, The Death of Captain America, Iron Man, which is the final issue of this much beleaguered miniseries.
God, finally. What is it, July?
Yeah, it took when did he die?
February, yeah.
Yeah, it took them from February to July to do five issues, something that was supposed to take only,
months, right? Yeah.
Just a disaster logistically. It totally screwed up the Captain America book, because these are supposed to come out before Captain America 26 came out, 27 came out, and now we're finally done.
So much so that this issue, in very small print, by the way, and I just noticed it. It said, note this story takes place before the events of Captain America number 26.
Right.
And considering Captain America number 26 was so delayed as it was, that's saying something.
Yep. Just another logistical problem at Marvel, which is they're having a lot lately. But.
So that said, why did you pick it?
That said, lateness aside, this issue was moving.
Yes.
In a way that... Captain America died in February, and I've sort of gotten used to the fact that he's dead, and there's a world without Captain America, and I've gotten used to the Marvel Universe, and now this one brought it all back to being like, damn, he's dead, you know?
Yep.
It sucks. This was the funeral issue, where they Tony Stark and the government throw Captain America a state funeral at Arlington National Cemetery, which is where they bury all the war veterans and heroes and things, you're not from the United States. That's where the official cemetery is. And
they gave him the presidential send-off, too.
Yeah, with the lone horse bringing him down, what's the street?
Whatever. The street. Pennsylvania Avenue.
And, it's full of dignitaries and all the superheroes are there. And, you know, it's basically one big issue full of eulogies for Captain America, which was hinted at in 26, and we thought we'd never see them, but actually we were supposed to have seen them before 26. We just never did. Tony Stark tries to give his little speech, but he's too overcome with emotion, which, depending on how you feel about Tony Stark, is either a good or a bad thing. it's either genuine or it's phony. And Sam Wilson, the Falcon, is Cap's old buddy, and he gives the big stirring emotional speech that carries us through 80% of this issue. And I thought it was really good. There was a lot of hype to live up to in Captain America. Everybody was talking about it. The characters were all congratulating Sam on a great eulogy, and it was a lot of hype to live up to. And I thought it did a good job. What did you think?
No, I thought this whole issue was great. I thought the Falcon's eulogy was amazing. The way to reflect on Cap's career and life and how it affected and touched everybody, and the method he used to involve everyone in that were, and I saw it coming as soon as he started doing it, but I knew that, you know, he's asking, you know, those who fought with him in World War II to stand up, and those he saved in World War II stand up, and those who fought with him as heroes stand up, and eventually the entire crowd in Washington, D.C. is standing, because it just shows how many people that this one man had touched.
That was apparently based on the eulogy that Jeff Loeb gave his son.
Oh, really?
Apparently, he did something very similar.
Yeah.
At his
but it worked.
Yeah, it was really emotional. And the format was every time Sam would tell a group to stand up, then the next page you turn, it'd be a full page splash of something representing that era. And this is a good time to mention the art by John Cassaday, which was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I think you said it in your review that Cassaday is possibly the best current penciler going out there, and I thoroughly agree with that. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, you had all the different eras of Cap. You had Cap fighting Nazis, Cap in the war, Cap liberating a concentration camp, Cap with, you know, the Avengers. It was like Cap with Falcon. It was a nice tour through the life of Captain America, and the double page splashes were just beautiful. And there was this one amazing double-page shot of the whole funeral where they're all revealed to be standing up, and it's just, it's just perspective going on for miles, and there's like a million heads in there. And I remember looking at that double-page spread and thinking that John Cassaday was crazy,
for drawing
all those people. But also, Laura Martin's colors were really great in this, because the actual funeral scenes are all sort of washed out in gray. It's raining, and then you had these vibrant one-page splashes for the flashbacks are really brightly colored.
Yeah,
you know, primary color, Captain America Adventures, and then the funeral itself is very gray and somber, and it's just beautifully done. A great capper, because the miniseries was rocky in terms of quality, but this was a really strong send-off.
This is a great way to go off. Yeah, it was really good, but that said, it doesn't, you know, what would it be without nitpicks?
just the very end was the real funeral for Cap, which is when they the original Avengers, who are still left, Tony and Ant-Man and Wasp, put Cap in a casket and send him back down into the Arctic, from which they found him.
And Namor.
Namor shows up because he found Cap originally. But I thought that was a nice little symmetrical ending for Cap.
Well, that's the thing. Do you think you assume he's dead. I mean, but do you think that's the hook to bring him back, is that he gets un-iced and then somehow brought back?
Who knows? There's going to be a way, and, you know, whatever.
It was a fitting way to put him back in ice and
yeah. All right, so rip it apart, buddy.
Yeah, okay, well, not to rip it apart, but okay. So nitpick number one is just on the schedule and the production of this book. Great idea. The talk about the references to Falcon's speech in issue 26 made no sense at the time.
Right.
And now they completely make sense, and the scheduling, unfortunately, completely made it awkward and worked against it, I think. That's just really kind of disappointing. Number two, while I liked the concept, and I didn't so much of the five stages of grief, and I didn't really like the execution of this, the hammering over our heads, the more I read this, and especially this issue, is that I feel as if this issue should have been Captain America number 26.
Right.
And you could have done these five stages of grief in the pages of Captain America, and I still think it would have worked out. Of course,
get a feeling that Brubaker wanted to tell that story.
Well, that goes against what Brubaker is doing with the book and everything like that, right? And then the question then becomes, what's more important, what Brubaker's plan for the book is versus what the plan for the company and their flagship one of their flagship characters is? You know, that gets
right. But why can't you have both? Why can't you have Brubaker's story and also this on the side?
Well, you could just put this on the side out on time. You know,
on time thing really screwed them.
And then just a couple other little nitpicks. The having some heroes in costume and some heroes not threw me off. And I first noticed it on that second page when the pallbearers were bringing them out, and there's Black Panther and Ms. Marvel in costume, but Tony and Falcon and Thing and not. I understand some heroes are still have secret identities and stuff like that. But even like the voiceover of the person, you know, the narrator, the press is saying, you know, and Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel, you know, like, why is she in costume?
Because it's like her military uniform.
Yeah,
you know, you go to a funeral in your full military dress. She's now a government soldier, and that's her uniform.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
They wear the suits.
Right. That took me out of it a little. Then also in the crowd amongst the costume heroes are the Young Avengers, which I thought was great. But aren't they still on the run? Like the I know some of them registered, but some of them didn't, and some of the ones that didn't are in the crowd.
I don't know. I don't read any of the books that appear.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like Sentinel. You know, he didn't register. I mean, he's still running with Luke Cage and everybody.
But was that before or after? You know what I mean?
This is. I mean, after all the death and everything, he didn't register. Yeah. So.
I don't know. I mean, I don't read those books, so I didn't notice that stuff. But you know.
Yeah, I mean, those are just little things I noticed. But those, like I said, those are just nitpicks. All in all, the book was just great. It was just really, really good. And really, the only thing again, the execution was great. The writing was great. The art was great. The only thing just against it is the timing. That was it.
Yep.
You know, so.
Cassidy draws a mighty fine book.
Yeah, every panel was just amazing.
And what's great was he got to basically hit all the major characters. You know, how often do you get to see one of the top-notch guys drawing everybody?
Yep, yeah.
And basically, besides the X-Men, he got basically every major Marvel character in this book.
Yeah, and he's drawing X-Men over in Astonishing, so he's pretty much covered now. So
he's got everyone. I'm done.
Yeah, no, but I thought it was really good. You know, this is a good way to end this whole thing, and now we can just move on.
And the great thing is, Fallen Son Iron Man. If you didn't, you don't need to have bought all these books. If you just want to get, you know, buy one, this is easily the best one. This one's a nice transition. If you're a Cap reader and not a Fallen Son reader, this is a good one to pick up.
Yeah, and I don't even think you needed to read the entire series to read any of them, honestly.
They're
all pretty much standalone stories from a different point of view.
Right, well, there's the collector gene that makes you want to collect all of them, but you don't need to.
Yeah, but this one was most accessible and most, you know, I think the most necessary of them all. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is shaping up. 2007 is beginning the summer of Green Arrow.
Yeah, apparently it is, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, with the big wrap-up of the series, Green Arrow the Marriage coming up, the Green Arrow Year Ones coming out next week. And this week we had Black Canary number one, the miniseries from Tom Bedard and Paolo...
Tony Bedard.
I'm sorry, Tony Bedard and Paolo Segura.
Yep.
So you pick this up, Ron?
Yeah, I did, actually. Yep.
What'd you think?
I really liked it, actually. I thought it was a fun romp. I guess apparently Black Canary hasn't accepted the proposal yet.
Apparently not. She didn't give him an answer.
Apparently she should check the Diamond solicitations.
Yeah, she should check all the solicitations.
Because she's already got a wedding planning book scheduled and the marriage book, so she should, you know, coordinate with her schedule.
Surprise ruined.
But I guess this issue is kind of a miniseries. I didn't know she has a daughter now.
Well, here's the thing. I really enjoyed this issue, and it was a fun romp, and the writing was good, and the art was kind of on the cheesecake line, but it was not.
No, I enjoyed it. It was
good. It was straddling the line. You know, one more step forward, it would have been too cheesecakey. But
what do you mean by cheesecake?
Well, there's just a lot of her in her underwear and her. You know.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was a little Adam Hughes-y at times. I could see that, but I don't know. I'd have a problem with it. But,
basically, this is in the Birds of Prey book. Black Canary was being trained to be this in a League of Assassins. She basically that was the 1 year later swap, but she was swapped places with Lady Shiva. Lady Shiva being the ultimate assassin, Shiva.
Yeah.
And she was training to take her place. She met this little girl who was also being trained and decided she didn't want to be an assassin. She wanted to save this girl, so she took the girl with her from the League of Assassins, and now she's got this adopted daughter.
The classic tale.
I hated that storyline. That was one of the stupidest Birds of Prey storylines in years, and I was not thrilled to see the daughter Sin in this book. It was fun. I mean, I put that aside. I said I just have to go with it, and it's fun.
Well, here's a question. Yeah. What is the Black Canary's current team affiliation?
She's the leader of the Justice League.
Oh, I see. Okay, and yet she has a toddler and they are traveling the country by motorcycle.
Well, that's the comic book conceit, you know. The characters in the team book are never there's never enough time to be everywhere, and you know.
I know. I'm just teasing. I was kind of thrown back to the kind of the cheesy PG movie of you know, saving the daughter, kind of, you know, saving the girl kind of thing. But I thought that was balanced with the great flashback to early Silver Age Justice League stuff. Pre-goatee Green Arrow, and we see the origin of his rivalry. Is that Merlin? Is that who it is?
Yeah.
The evil archer, and I assume that through this, I assume the gist of this is going to be whatever challenge she has to deal with this guy wanting revenge on Green Arrow makes her realize that she wants to marry him, and we get I can predict right now the last issue will be her accepting the proposal. So
right, well, but yeah.
I'll buy it. I'll go through. What I really liked was towards the end is that so apparently her she has an ex-husband out there from back when she was in college, and he makes a reappearance in her life, and it turns out he's working with the Merlin guy who wants revenge on Green Arrow, and apparently he has an entire office of all Green Arrow memorabilia.
Talk about obsession. Jeez.
Yeah, and what I thoroughly liked is on his shelf behind his desk is the Speedies on Heroin cover.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that.
It was like, oh, nice. That was a nice touch.
Well, was he there taking a picture?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, who knows?
But if you're into the whole Green Arrow thing, this is a nice little addition to the whole world of the adventure of it all. And
they're really
she's a fun character. She's a good character.
They're really fleshing out the world of Green Arrow, aren't they?
They're making a push for it, and I love it because he's one of my favorites.
I'm cool with it. So.
Outsiders 49, which was the conclusion to the Checkmate Outsiders crossover, which was fantastic.
Yep.
This was very nearly the pick of the week.
Really? I mean, this whole crossover was great, but I thought this kind of ended kind of neatly.
Well, they tend to, but it
kind of wrapped up in two pages.
Yeah, but it's less about that. It's more about the emotion of this woman who got mutilated by the big egg dude.
Yeah.
You know, the last woman that Batman's loved. And he had to find her and, you know, deal with
right.
that.
But you didn't feel a little deflated by the fact that all you saw was Batman telling the rest of the Outsiders where to go, and then you see this whole Nightwing and Boomerang fighting their way through trying to get to her, and then you turn the page and it's the egg guy's gone and Batman's got Sasha, and he's just like, he's gone. Like, there was no conflict resolution. You know, like, it just happened.
Right. Well, no, I wasn't, because that's the classic thing. The villain escapes, and you save, you know, the person who needs to be saved, and then the villain escapes to fight another day.
I don't even know why the villain escaped, though. I didn't get the sense that the villain knew they were coming. I don't know. He had to.
They were being attacked by the whole army of.
Well, they were being attacked by little robot guys. But I mean, I guess he knew that they were coming for him and turned tail real quickly. But there was no explanation of it. It was just like, did Batman fight him? Like, because the room was all wrecked. Like, did Batman take him out? Like, I don't know. It was just Batman just says, he's gone. You know? Like, I just thought it just ended far too quickly. That's all. So
it's possible. I can see that.
Yeah. So
This is leading into the transition of the next phase of the book, which is Batman and the Outsiders.
Which might very well get me reading the Outsiders. Talk about, like, the end got me. I was like, ooh, that sounds like it's going to be good.
Yeah, so, it does.
But Nightwing...
You can tell Batman's pissed off.
Yeah, Nightwing steps down as the leader of the Outsiders, right?
Yeah, he's not comfortable with the direction of the team. They're not really a family. He's a Teen Titans guy. He's a family. He likes to have the family around the team be all chummy.
He doesn't like the work. Yeah,
he doesn't like to be a team full of cold-hearted soldiers. And
well, he said it there. He said that when Roy or Speedy or Red Arrow now formed the team, he said this wouldn't be about friends or family. It would be about the job. It would be about the work. Yeah, you know?
Right.
And
doesn't want that.
Yeah, exactly. So. And a little harken back to the 70s with Batman and the Outsiders, right? The 70s or 80s when that was what the book originally was.
Yeah, it was in the 80s, Jim Aparo.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
No, I thought this was a lot of fun. This book was a blast.
This crossover was just, you know, really well done from top to bottom.
Right.
Writing, art-wise. Greg Rucka and Judd Winnick should write together more often.
Yeah, but what I don't understand was the cover. Because you had Batman holding a T-sphere with the reflection of the Outsiders looking into it.
Well, it's Batman's holding the T-sphere, which is representing the leader of the Checkmate.
Yeah, I understand. I know. I understand the composition. I understand how it related to the story. That's all. So.
Well, it's not really. It's a symbolic. you could take it as symbolic of Batman holding the whole team in his hand.
Yeah, I guess so. But And then, of course, we had the little conflict in Mr. Terrific and what's her face, the Holler woman,
Amanda Waller.
Amanda Waller, yeah, that's it, fighting over the politics stuff. You know, so the little checkmate. You know, back office politics happening in Outsiders, which is neat. Which is
God, I hope checkmate continues.
Oh yeah, well, is it any threat? Are we aware of it being any danger?
The sales are really, really bad.
Yeah. How grisly did Sasha look? Like, he did a number on her, didn't he?
He looked like she was missing a couple limbs and
yeah.
Bad news.
Yeah, bad news. I wonder how she's gonna recover from that.
Nanites.
That's
nanotechnology.
The 21st century comic book solution. Just the nanites took care of it. That's all.
A couple of nanites should be good to do in a week.
Yeah. So before the show, you were asking me what my pick of the week would have been.
Yep.
It probably would have been Countdown 43. Now that I think about it.
It was close. It was a weird week of two funerals.
Yes. Yeah. Which was two in the major comics too. We haven't talked about Countdown in a while, but I really, really, I'm not even reading every book in the DC Universe, and I'm really liking the way that Countdown is intermixing with the other books, in a crossover style, but not a necessary crossover style.
Yeah, I think you're probably a better judge than I am, because I'm reading most of them, so you have no problem following this without the other books.
Yeah, I've had no problem at all, and in fact, it's helping me kind of keep tabs on what's happening in the other books, and maybe
it's actually a good way of keeping your toe in the DCU without having to buy anything.
Yeah, which is something that I never even thought of, but me being a Flash fan, I'm well aware of the contents of what the main plot of this book is, especially covering the funeral of Bart Allen, which is immensely huge. To the degree where it actually made me wonder, like I know the Flash is a big deal in Keystone and Central City, and I know that Bart was loved, but like, this is a huge turnout. Like, this is
stadium seating. There's like 50,000 people at the funeral.
Like, didn't Wally die? Like, I know they didn't have a funeral for Wally because they knew he'd be back, but like, could you say the same for Bart too? I mean. Like,
yeah, it was a bit big, especially for somebody who's only Flash for
a week, like a year in comics time. What is that?
Yeah, a year in comics time.
Yeah, it was touching
though. It was good. It was again there was some really good eulogies. The whole playing of Bart's final videotape.
Yep.
Was nice.
Just,
and
yeah,
I don't like to nitpick the Countdown because knowing 52 or at least the style of a 52. Part book, things get revealed much later on.
Right.
So I don't like to say why is this happening because it may be revealed later. But the Pied Piper and Trickster, two of the characters in Countdown, we're following, and they're secretly at the funeral paying their respects to Bart. And Trickster says, "I'm upset the kid's dead. I swear to God, I am."
Yeah.
I went back to Flash to make sure he was one of the people that beat him to death.
Yeah. No. You know, I think he knows that.
Piper wasn't there, but Trickster did beat him to death.
No, but he said before that he says we shouldn't be here. Every damn one of them hates us. We're gonna get caught. And they freak out when Wonder Girl goes crazy with saying what they're gonna do to the people who did this, and that's when they panic and start running. You know, like I mean,
it's like how much guilt is he feeling? He's one of the guys that pummeled him to death. You know.
Right. Yeah. True. Well, there's also the criminals often return, like arsonists go watch the building burn.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's usually not with remorse. It's usually.
Yeah.
Creepy sexual fire thing.
No, but I mean, it wasn't that confusing to me that they were there. I mean, especially with those two characters, because I feel as if they didn't want, they're not killers, Like, they kind of got caught up with the rest of the rogues, and I think that
Pied Piper wasn't there. I looked back and looked. He was not involved in the beatdown.
Yeah, okay.
But you had the whole funeral scene, then you had a little bit of Jason Todd and Wonder Girl, I still call her Wonder Girl, Donna Troy.
Yeah.
And the monitor who's helping them. And then you had a little bit of Holly Robinson and now Harley Quinn on the Amazon.
Yeah, that was interesting, I thought. Yeah. Now, real quickly before we gloss over it, I feel as if the Jason Todd, Donna Troy monitor team, that's happening a little fast for me.
Yeah, that is.
Almost to the point where I want to go back and read the previous weeks to see if I just kind of glossed over those scenes, if I didn't, I just felt as if Donna accepted Jason far too quickly, and now they're, this little team working together. I didn't really, I thought that was moving very fast for me.
Right.
And the Holly Robinson thing, I have no idea what's up with that, so I'm just kind of, I don't even know who she is, so.
Well, she's Catwoman's sidekick.
Oh, okay. Well, I figured it'll be revealed sooner or later.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is the Monarch.
Right.
Monarch was the villain in another thing in the 90s, right?
Armageddon 2001, which was in 1991.
And who is Monarch supposed to be? Am I supposed to know who this person is?
Well, Monarch here is Captain Atom.
Okay.
even though his skin is colored wrong.
Interesting. So
oh,
this...
no, he's gold, isn't he? Isn't he gold?
So this Monarch is Captain Atom?
Well, Monarch back in 91 was supposed to be Captain Atom originally.
Okay.
The big event was that one of the heroes went bad and in the future killed everyone, and the whole summer-long event was who was going to be the killer, and it was going to be Captain Atom. And somehow in the pre-internet days, it was leaked out, so they quickly changed it to be Hawk from Hawk and Dove.
Right. So the other question is this still Hawk?
No, many years later, they finally rectified it. Captain Atom is now Monarch. And I forget how that happened,
it looks like he just has peach-colored skin. Like, it doesn't look like
Captain Atom. Actually supposed to be gold. Remember in that Captain Atom miniseries we read?
He's in the bleed, too. Yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah.
No, it is Captain Atom.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be revealed. It just was.
But he's got his Emperor Palpatine moment with the whole.
Yeah, troops. Yeah. That was straight out of Episode 2 or Episode 3. Episode 2. Yeah. So
Monarch is massing some huge army for what purpose we don't know yet. Yeah. And Donna Troy and Jason Todd are searching for the Atom, Ray Palmer, and for some reason. And then I think this series is chugging along nicely.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
It's a different feel than 52. It's not the same. People keep wanting to compare it. The only comparable thing is that it's a weekly series that's 52 parts. But other than that, it's not.
I mean, honestly, I like 52. If you ask me, was a weekly story plucked out of continuity, and Countdown is a weekly story thrust into continuity, and that can be really dicey. But I think they're doing a good job at it. So I don't know.
So far, they're on track.
But if you're still curious about Countdown, you don't need to be reading everything. I'm having a good time doing it, you know, and it all works out. So that's just me.
And I wanted to quickly mention, quite famously on this podcast and on the website, everyone knows that I feel like Nightwing is a book that has been, for many years, very subpar.
Yep.
And I've been sort of collecting it out of loyalty and inertia.
Yep.
You know, and I have to admit, issue 134 came out this week. Issue 133, 134 have been actually quite fun.
Oh, cool.
It's a dramatic turnaround for Nightwing, and I'm really happy. I don't know what it is or what happened, because previously the Marv Wolfman stories were sort of way too throwbacky for me, but this has been a fun tale. The art from Jamal Engel's really good, and it's just I'm really happy, because it's not great again, and it's not really good again, but it's starting to turn the corner of being fun and entertaining and not horribly throwbackish. So anyone who – I know a lot of people on our website ask about Nightwing. In fact, somebody just started a discussion about it today, but this is if you dropped off of Nightwing because you didn't like the stories in the last few years, 133, 134 are a good place to jump back on, because it's been good.
Excellent, very cool. Well, if you wanted to jump back on Nightwing, you could do that by heading over to Jim Haley's Universe. Jim Haley's Universe is one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores, actually, based out of New York City, with two locations. Jim Haley's offers the best selection of comics titles and related merchandise. They got everything from mainstream comics to manga to minis to indies to everything you might like. Jim Haley's Universe has it all. So next time you're in New York City, go visit the place where art and literature meet, Jim Haley's Universe. They got two locations. Jim Haley's Universe in Manhattan is opposite the Empire State Building on 33rd Street, and they've got one on Staten Island at 325 New Dorp Lane. And you can also check them out online. You go to their website at www.jhuniverse.com, or you can head over to their MySpace page at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe, all spelled one block together.
So be their friend on MySpace.
Yeah, definitely be their friend on MySpace, because they're one of the better comic book stores out there. There are a lot of good people. So.
And if you head into the store, tell them iFanboy sent you.
Exactly. So
a couple of quick hit books we want to get out of the way. This week, the first two books I read were Jonah Hex 21 and Scalped number 7.
Now, I thought you dropped Scalped.
No, that was Josh. Josh dropped Scalped.
Oh, okay.
I had to literally, after reading these two books, stop reading comics and sit for half an hour.
Why?
Because these were two of the grisliest books in a while. I read them back to back, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
They were great comics, you know, but it's just back to back. There was like horrible torture in both of them.
My God.
And ironically, there was a scalping in Jonah Hex, but not in Scalp. there was sexual assault and just awfulness, awful humanness. But that's the appeal of these books, and they're not. It doesn't glorify it. It's not like reveling in it in a sadomasochistic way. It's just very, very open about the horrible things that people do to each other. And,
Well, of course, I know how good Jonah Hex is from hearing you guys talk about it, but I've been hearing more and more good things about Scalped.
Scalped is a really good Jason Aaron, R.M. Guerra. It's a Vertigo book, and this issue is told from the point of view of the main villain.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, one of those humanized bad guy issues, and it was actually really, really well done, and I'm loving Scalp.
Awesome.
And just to save you the indignity, I didn't pick Jonah Hex as my pick of the week, which it almost was too.
Oh, well, no, I would have. That would be cool. That's
I didn't
fine.
Want to have you talk about Cowboys for.
I can talk about Cowboys. Let's do it. Let's talk about Cowboys. So, like, were they in leather or more of a.
There was chaps.
Chaps. It's interesting. So, not really gingham or dungarees. There's a lot of
no,
chaps.
But there was a guy in mid scalp who got. The scalping got interrupted, and the guy held on to the guy's scalp, and it ripped away, and it was.
Oh God. Almighty.
Yeah. So, I literally had to stop and go, oh, my God. Take a break. Someone give me Nightwing. All right.
Well, I'm glad that you got your little cowboy.
I didn't pick up Wolfman number 2 though. So how did that go?
Interesting. I saw it was funny because earlier this week I think I asked both you and Josh. I was like, remember Wolfman?
Yes.
Remember that book? Yeah, the Kirkman's new book that launched a free comic book day. Well, luckily enough, issue number 2 finally came out this week, and so I picked it up because I enjoyed the first issue. The Astounding Wolfman, and I was curious about it. And my biggest, if you recall, my biggest complaint in the first one was that it moved very quickly. Right.
Yes.
Well, that momentum did not stop in this issue. Remember the last issue ended off with a big cliffhanger that there's some guy who's like, I know who you are and I can help you.
The government, the daddy character.
Well, yeah, the daddy character turned out to be a vampire. And the book picks up 3 weeks later after they've been training every night for the past 3 weeks. And now he's got a handle on his powers and he knows how to change and become the Wolfman. And so he goes out and he goes to the guy who does Invincible's costume and gets a costume. And
oh, it's the same universe, right?
I think it's the same universe. It reminds
it's got to be if it's the same guy in the costume.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I think it is. I've got to go back and look at Invincible to see. But it's like, is the guy in Invincible Art Rosenbaum, professional tailor to superheroes all over the world? I think it's
very,
that guy.
He very well could be.
Yeah, I think.
I picked it up in the store, and I opened the page randomly and saw the Wolfman in a costume, and I went, no.
Yeah. Well, the costume wasn't that bad.
No. Well, I mean, my thing with it is, if I continue to hear it's good, I will catch up on it, but, you know, for now.
My thing with it is that it's not bad, but it's just not fleshed out.
It's just
stuff is just happening, and I don't really know, like, we find out that he's been training for 3 weeks, his wife doesn't really like it, he's building some sort of secret lair that the vampire guy has hypnotized all the construction workers to think they're building a mall, and so there's one page of his foreman telling, I don't like this, I don't like having hypnotized workers, you know, and it's just one page of them building something, and then he gets the costume, and then he joins a fight with another team of superheroes. And then actually the big, you know, the shocking ending actually is that before he goes out on patrol, he decides to get it on with his wife, and he turns
back. While in wolf form?
No, while in human form, but he turns it into the wolf form, but with no control. And he bursts out of the house and runs through the city, and he runs into one of the superheroes, and the superhero flies down and is like, hey, you know, it was great to work together. Thanks for, you know, like kind of that camaraderie of superhero kind of thing. Like,
yep.
You know, like, oh, we know, what's your name? And blah, blah, blah. And then out of nowhere, the Wolfman just guts the guy. the last page is him putting his claw through his chest and all entrails coming out, and that's how it ended. So So it's interesting what's going on. It's just moving very fast for me.
So you think this is in response to, like, Ant-Man getting canceled? He's just writing as fast as he possibly can and move through the story. I'm going to tell this damn story no matter how many issues they give me.
I would hope not, because I don't think he's going to worry about that on Image, but maybe. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
I've heard this described as Invincible Wolfman.
It's a little of Invincible Wolfman, a little bit. I can't deny that. So anyway,
all right. Well, if I will jump on it if I can hear good things about it.
Yeah. The other book I wanted to highlight this week was on the hot off the tails of my pick last week of X-Men 200, Uncanny X-Men number 488 came out this week, and it is not related to any of the events going on in X-Men 200.
Right.
What we've got is a separate team now of Warpath, Storm, and Caliban actually. And there's a fourth, I believe, in there. I forget. Hepzibah, whatever. Hepzibah, the Starjammer, who was with Christopher Summers, Corsair's wife or girlfriend.
Well, there's also Nightcrawler, but he's not in it.
Well, he's in the book with he's on the cover, but he's not with them in the tunnels. He's actually
right. He's not on the mission, but he's on the team.
Well, yeah, because if you let me get to it, Nightcrawler and Professor Xavier are they decide to Professor Xavier decides that Nightcrawler is going to come with them. They're going to go find Magneto. So because there's rumor that Magneto is back, and so Professor Xavier guesses the plane and they fly off.
intending to read the minds of everyone he comes in contact with to find Magneto?
That was pretty much because he can't find Magneto on Cerebro. So
yeah, like that's like he's become very morally gray.
Did you buy this book?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I thought here we're talking about
no,
it. Like I jumped
back on Uncanny with the second storyline, hoping that taking out of space, I'll be more interested in that. I'm not quite sure if I am or not.
Fascinating. Okay, that's good.
I'm still on the fence.
That makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Professor Xavier is a little more brazen with his powers. I guess now that he's got him back, you know.
So how are we gonna find him? I'm gonna read the minds of everyone we come in contact with.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I gotta say, I was oddly surprised to enjoy to have Storm back on the team.
Yeah. I like Storm.
Yeah, I never really liked her. The art on this, I remember Salvador LaRocca as being really, really good. And
yeah,
not that this isn't, but it's different than what I remember.
Well, it's completely different. He did a couple issues of Superman a few months ago. Yeah. This is him doing painted style.
Yeah.
He's normally not a painter, he's just a regular penciler.
Right.
He's much better as a penciler.
His Val Cooper looked awful.
Yeah, she was ugly.
Yeah, yeah. And she's not really so...
Did you notice, I don't know if you did or not, we got an email which was what alerted me.
Yeah.
This book cost $4.
I didn't even notice that. Fascinating.
They're adding an extra dollar to all the X-Men books for the Endangered Species crossover.
I'm okay with that.
That's kind of annoying. I mean...
I'm okay with that.
$4 is a lot for a book, you know, even now.
Right, but if you break it down, I mean, 22 pages divided by $3 is how much, you know, and then add on another 8 pages... You know, the books are thicker, you know, like that. I mean,
right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too, you know, steeped in the ways of business and know that things cost money and I don't know. It's just, but I see your point. Like, what if you didn't want that extra book, that extra, you don't care about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, if I'm not following Endangered Species and I'm really only going to be reading Uncanny and X-Factor, I'm not going to be really following it.
The follow-up on Endangered Species is that's the crossover that's going on throughout the summer in the form of 8-page backup stories and all the main X titles. And last week we were talking about how Beast held a conference call with all these supervillains.
And there's still the page with all the faces made me laugh just thinking about them all conferencing together.
But we finally they explained who they were, and it turns out it was Dr. Doom, Mr. Sinister, Arnim Zola, the High Evolutionary, which we guessed correctly. The ones that I was surprised that I wasn't able to pick out was Pandemic, who I don't actually know who that is. I assume there's somebody in New X-Men or X-Men or something like that. I don't know who that is. Sugar Man, who was tied back to the Dark Beast and stuff in the 90s. Spiral, who works for Mojo. And then Kavita Rao, who is the doctor from Astonishing, who found the cure, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So that explains who all the villains are, you know.
Now, this made me laugh hard, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
You've got a bunch of villains on a conference call. You've got Dr. Doom, and you've got Armin Zola, and you've got... Pandemic, and you got Mr. Sinister, MODOK, and then Sugarman.
Yeah.
That's not very intimidating.
Sugarman, well, look at those teeth. Sugarman was never my favorite villain.
But did they run out of scary names?
Yeah, I mean, Sugarman was a bad period.
Sugar's delicious.
Yeah, Sugarman was from a bad period of the X-Men. I have no defense of Sugarman at all.
It could be Broccoli Man, something that you don't want to eat. But I want to eat sugar, a lot of it, and Sugarman's not intimidating.
Diabetes
Mr. Sinister
Man.
And Sugarman.
Diabetes Man.
Oh, Diabetes Man. Diabetes Man is more appropriate for a man who looks like that.
Yeah. That's awful. So,
why don't you just call him Tasty Brownie Man?
It was interesting to see what the supervillains' responses were in the context of as Beast travels to go meet with the High Evolutionary on Wondegore Mountain.
I like the idea of none of the villains wanted to help, but you didn't know if it was because they didn't want to help or they just didn't want to admit they wanted to help in front of the other supervillains.
Well, yeah, that was what Beast's speculation was. They didn't want to save face, but what I thought was hysterical was some of the responses were great. Was that, you know, like Dr. Doom, it's like, you have nothing to offer me that I possibly need. He's like, plus biology is not my forte.
I'm not so strong in,
you know, and
math.
And MODOK in math. And MODOK is like, AIM intends to exploit the current situation in other ways. Like, what? And Mr. Sinister, you know, like, you know, you yoke my genius to your blind gropings? I think not. Like, it was great.
Oh, and Sugar Man makes a sugar pun. I didn't even realize that.
A lot sweeter, yeah, exactly.
You have to make the pill a lot sweeter, my good doctor.
Yeah,
is he one of those villains?
Yeah, and he's like, he experiments with people and all that's awful. Anyway.
Does he pour sugar in their gas tanks?
Yeah. Yes, he does. That's the ultimate way to get at somebody. So that's interesting. So apparently he decided to go see the High Evolutionary because he talks in a riddle.
Right.
He says, you will not reach the end of this quest, not if you begin it facing in the wrong direction.
It's like playing World of Warcraft.
And what I love is Beast actually going, but what was he saying exactly? I kind of like Beast's monologue type thing, so that's pretty cool. So yeah, so I don't know. I'm happy with in the X-Men world, so I'm okay with it. So
I'm a little on the fence with this book only because I don't, you know, it's still early in the storyline. I don't know if I love it or not, but
yeah.
I will say the $4 price tag would put me, if I'm on the fence looking for a reason to drop it, the $4 would make me more likely to drop it than not.
That's pretty steep. Ugh. Anyway, so. Yeah.
So that's it for this week's books.
It was a good time. Good week.
Yeah, I thought it was an okay week.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money. I also picked up the David Laugham hardcover from Vertigo. Night Fish or Silver Fish or something like that.
Oh, I spent $76.
Yeah, I spent $100.
I bought the Batman Ego hardcover, the Darwin Cook Collected Tales, and I bought the new Invincible trade.
I bought my last Invincible trade now that I'm back on issues. This trade will get me up to speed, and then I'll be on issues forever. So,
look at them on my shelf. They're beautiful.
Yes, they are. Anyway, so, all right, cool. Well, $4.99 cover price on Uncanny will be tough, but there are ways you can save money in other places, Connor.
Yes, if you like movies, you can go to the Netflix. They've got over 75,000 titles, and there's no late fees. It's free shipping. What you do is you go on the website, which is www.netflix.com, and you go pick your movies, and they send them right to your house, and then you watch them and send them right back, and it's free. Fast delivery. They got plans starting as low as $4.99, and if you want a two-week free trial, you can go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. It's important you put all of it in there, including the www, and you get a two-week free trial. You can check them out. Go to www.netflix.com today and see what everyone else that's cool has been seeing for quite a while.
Excellent. I do love the Netflix.
So, I enjoy it.
All right, cool. Well, let's dive into our email box, our inbox.
Hey, the email's back.
Yay. Yeah. Okay, cool. So our first email comes from Tracy from Roanoke, Virginia, which I thought was the lost colony. But apparently people have populated.
They've got email there.
Yeah, they've got email. Who knew?
Somebody should ask them what happened.
Tracy, what happened on that island? We're dying to know. My fifth grade history class is dying to know. Tracy asks, do we read all the extra stuff at the end of trades? He asked because he recently read the first trade of
Wolverine. That's girl, Tracy.
Okay. She asks, how do you know that?
Because I know.
Okay. Tracy from Roanoke asks, do you read all the extra stuff at the end of trades? I asked because I recently read the first trade of Wolverine Origins and was disappointed in the printing of alternate settings for the story. I think this is because it disrupts the suspension of disbelief and impedes the establishment of a mythology in the reader's mind, i.e., oh yeah, these aren't real and anybody could have written it. I'm just curious on your personal takes. Oh, and someone might have asked you this. It's really juvenile, but if you could be any character from any book, who would it be? Tracy's guess is that I would be Wolverine, Connor would be Batman, and Josh would be some indie character like Morpheus. All right, so let's answer the first question. Do you read the extra stuff at the end of trades?
Sometimes. I think it has to do with what kind of person you are. This also applies to DVD extras.
Yeah, well, I was going to make the comparison that to me, the stuff at the back of trades are like DVD extras, and I love watching DVD extras, and I love reading stuff at the back of trades. And actually, there's a trend in the opposite direction of books like Criminal from Brubaker and Sean
Phillips.
I was going to say Sean Casey, but he's a first baseman on the Tigers, right? Anyway, I was looking at the standings before the podcast. Anyway, so Brubaker and Criminal, they printed none of the extras that appeared in the issues in the trade, and actually the trade just has the story freeze.
Really?
And some other books like, I think Fraction is doing that with Casanova. Some other books are doing this in a way to get people to buy the single, to give them a little extra reason to buy the single issues. And I don't know how I feel about that. You know, like it's kind of a reversal of fortunes in that regard, you know, which is...
Well, I think that, yeah.
I mean, I think the way I look at a collected trade is it's a collection of all the material having to do with that title, and that's what I want to read, you know.
I think there's two kinds of people in regard of... Some people want to go behind the curtain, and some people don't.
Yep.
You know, some people just don't want to have the magic ruined for them. Some people say that the DVD extras are helping to take away the magic of the movies. You see all the CGI, you see how the movie... You see how the character was made in the computer. You see how the stunt was done.
Right.
It's harder to really immerse yourself in the world when you know how it's all done.
Right.
I, as someone who's loves that stuff, I don't mind. But some people I know don't watch the extras, don't read the extra things, don't want to know how things.
Yeah, are well, made. I mean that's the great thing. They'll be forcing you to watch it or to read it. So
yeah.
So
I read it sometimes if I'm really really interested in it. So
all right. So if I could be any character, I wouldn't be Wolverine, even though I have the sideburns. I'd probably be Cyclops.
Yeah, I guess that. I'm gonna have to go with Nightwing.
All right, and
she's really close on these. You know, she's like right off the bullseye.
Yeah, and Josh wouldn't be Morpheus. He'd be more like Snapper Carr or Rick Jones. All right.
No. He would be, he'd be John Constantine, I bet.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So.
Why not?
I wonder if he can pull off the trench coat. Okay, anyway.
He might. Craig, formerly from Oklahoma, is now from Kansas. He moved.
Glad to hear.
Craig writes, I was wondering what you all thought of the cross-gen line of comics. I don't recall you ever talking about it much. I had never really heard of it until recently when I bought some clearance trade paperbacks called Forge, which are a collection of several of the titles they put out. After a little Wikipedia reading, I found some history in the company and how they are no more, having gone bankrupt and eventually sold. But there are several big names attached to the work, including Ron Mars, Greg Land, and Mark Waid. I have yet to read all of the stuff, but I really got into the title Sojourn, which has some really nice art by Greg Land. Unfortunately, the series was left on a cliffhanger and has not been resolved due to the company going bankrupt and selling the rights to Disney. Anyways, I was just curious if you had ever read Sojourn or any of the cross-gen titles and what we thought of the books. He kind of answered his own question. Why don't we talk about the line? Because it went bankrupt about a year before we started doing the show.
Right, exactly. Well, did you ever read any of the books when it was around?
I read Ruse.
Okay.
Which was Mark Waid and Butch Geiss's.
They had some great names out there. They had, George Perez was there for a while, and
They emerged with a big splash. They bought a lot of the talent. They got Perez and Waid, and they stole Chuck Dixon.
What I think is interesting is that on top of those big names that they brought out was that they also brought in a bunch of young talent that we're talking about now, Steve Niles and Jim Chung and people like that came out of CrossGen, which is interesting as well.
Yeah. It was definitely an interesting experiment in comic book making. They tried to make the Mark Alessi, the guy who started it, tried to run it like a business. Like, they had to be in at 9, they finished at 5, and you had to do a certain amount of work in between, and they got a salary and they got benefits, and that was really enticing to some people. They all had to work in the same office.
Yeah, they all had to move to Florida, right? They were in Orlando.
But, the books never really sold. They were fantasy-based, and, fantasy is just not a big genre anymore in comics.
I never read a single issue. So.
I read Ruse because it was a take on Sherlock Holmes, and it was Mark Waid, and it was actually quite fun.
Yeah, I heard it was good, So.
Also, Mark Alessi was the most intimidating man in comics for about a year.
Yes, he was. He's very scary.
But that's why you don't hear about CrossGen, because they're no more.
All right, cool. So our next email comes from Sully, who says, I posit this. Batman as a character seems most effective when told in stories out of continuity. For some reason, Batman is one of the only characters that constantly gets limited series that are not canon. And I don't mean Elseworlds, like what if Bruce Wayne were Canadian books. I mean books that could fit into various stages of his career, but don't have to match current continuity. Look at Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Dark Moon Rising, Batman Grendel, Trinity, the entire Legend series, and of course, Dark Knight Returns. For whatever reason, Batman just lends itself to the single story series, which can be totally self-contained. Maybe one thing that helps is that Batman is so well-known, it's totally unnecessary to explain who he is or his origin. Everyone knows it. But ask your mom why Green Arrow fights crime. Batman is one of my favorite characters in comic done, but I don't regularly buy any of his series. I don't think it would take away from the character if suddenly he had no monthly book, but instead had regular limited series telling standalone stories. I admit that Long Halloween can be seen as canon, but just as someone else's version of it. But hopefully you still understand my point. Well, those are mighty big words on the Bat Guy.
Yeah, if Bruce Wayne was Canadian, he'd have health insurance. I take issue with the premise of his theory, which is that these books are not continuity. Anything is continuity in my mind.
Right, but what I think he means is that they're not like, Long Halloween takes place after Dark Victory takes place after, Dark Knight Return. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, they're not sequential stories in terms of serial storytelling. They are miniseries and they're sequential storytelling in that regard, but they don't fit into the greater ongoing continuity. On a monthly basis. I think he has a great point.
He has a good point that, somebody once said, I don't remember who it was, but somebody in the industry said that every writer in comics has a Batman story.
Yep, yeah.
For some reason, the character of Batman lends itself to almost any genre, any time period, any sort of idea. You can transport that idea of the young child seeking, revenge on his parents' murder to anywhere, and it works. And for some reason, he's just elastic in that he can fit. And it's entertaining and it's fun and you don't have to. There's not too much to worry about. You can't do that with a lot of other characters.
And I almost say the only other character that could pull it off would probably be Spider-Man, because he's known his origin. Like, for example, on a whim, I picked up the Marvel Adventures Spider-Man number 29 this week just because it had the Greg Gargoyle on it. And that was written by Peter David, but it's a kid's book. It's named The Kids, but it's completely out of continuity. It's just taking what the essence of Spider-Man is. He's a kid with powers, and he's a student, and he's got to fight and stuff like that, and it just works. You know, like, it's not, you know, like, you can tell a timeless Spider-Man story without, you know, really thinking about the monthly books as well. You know, so.
Yeah, no, it's just something about the character and Spider-Man maybe too that you can just do that. But I think that I think the whole idea of continuity is in my mind the Batman Year One is in continuity. It's not in the official, quote unquote, official DC continuity, but in my mind it is. It doesn't
matter. Right, and actually that's interesting because Batman Year One actually took place in the ongoing monthly book. So
yeah, exactly.
if you didn't have the monthly book, then you wouldn't have gotten that story. But of course that was 20 years ago, and things are different now. And
I think some people, I'm not talking about Sully, but some people just need to not worry about what is and isn't official and just enjoy the stories.
So. Yeah, that's good advice. So,
yeah.
I would love to read The Long Halloween though. I gotta borrow that from you. I still haven't read it.
Yeah, so. That's very good.
Anyway, all right, cool. So if you have any questions and you'd like to email us, you can go to your email client and email and type in contact@ifanboy.com and send us your questions. We'd love to hear from you. And those of you who have written in have gotten a large amount of responses from us as we recently caught up for the past couple of weeks, months of emails. And
we're almost caught up.
Yeah, we're almost caught up, but we respond to everything. So if you don't hear from us, stay tuned. So
eventually.
Yes.
YouBuyNow.com is your spot in the web for toys, action figures, collectibles, and prop replicas. Check out the excellent selection of DC Direct, Marvel Legends, Master Replicas, Star Wars figures, and more. That's YouBuyNow.com, YOUBuyNow.com.
All right, let's dive into the voicemail. Our first voicemail has got a little bit of anger.
Hey, iFanboys. This is Matt from Simi Valley, California. Just wanted to kind of let out my anger about Action Comics 851. I was reading it thinking that it was going to be the conclusion to the story, and I, you know, in the middle of the book, I was thinking, oh, this, you know, I was remembering why it was so good. The art's fun, the writing's well done, it's, you know, it's an interesting story, but it drove me insane seeing that this wasn't the conclusion. There's still another issue to go, and it's probably going to take another 4 or 5 months for the stupid issue to come out, so... I don't know. Just wanted to kind of rant on it. Wondering what your thoughts were about the book. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That was the calmest rant I've ever heard.
But it was a rant, nonetheless.
No, it was a rant, but it was like, I just want to express my anger and not ever raise my voice.
But the thing is that I felt his pain, though. I did feel
his pain. No, he sounded beaten down, definitely. Yeah.
Did you get Action Comics this week?
No, I'm done with
it. It was the 3D issue, by the way.
Yeah, I thought about it for about a second.
I got to play with the 3D in the store, and it was really well done.
I heard that it was well done, but
it was well done. Yeah. But the observation, I'm actually in San Francisco, and I was at Isotope, and Jared at Isotope, his observation about it was, I don't understand why it's 3D. Like, what does it have to do with the story?
Which
I think is a great point, you know, which is a big thing to worry about in that case.
So Matt, you're actually probably going to get more angry when you find out that this story is not concluding within Action Comics, it's concluding in Action Comics Annual, the next one that comes out.
They completely fumbled this ball.
It's so off that title's so off the rails. They had to take it out of the book and finish it outside the book.
Yeah, this whole Donner experiment. While it was great to announce San Diego last year, just completely blown up.
That was last year.
Yeah,
we're almost at the next con.
And you know what?
And they haven't even finished their first arc.
And you know what I think is funny is that honestly, I don't really think anybody cares.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, it's like, oh, whatever. It's to be expected. It's frustrating. Then again, I'm not a big Action Comics.
No, I mean, I don't care in that I'm not angry because I don't care.
Yeah.
Literally, I'm apathetic, which is worse than being angry.
Yeah.
If I was angry, I'd at least care about the book. But DC fumbled Superman's relaunch so badly that I just don't care.
That's a very good point. Oh, God, awful. All right.
All right, our next voicemail has to say thank you.
Hey, guys. My name is Robin, and this isn't a question or anything, just a comment. I've been involved with comics pretty much my whole life, but a couple of years ago, I really just stopped buying them. I lost interest in comic books, and yesterday, through an inexplicable chain of events, stumbled upon your guys' webcast on Revision 3, and just, it was like the light turned on, and I was stood up and went, what have I been doing with my life? I've been wasting it by not reading comics. Just was totally inspired and excited about it, ran out to the nearest comic book store, bought Strangers in Paradise and Runaways and a couple other trades, and on the way home was so pumped that I couldn't actually wait to drive all the way back home, pulled off at a park, just read through all of them, had to go back and buy the rest of a lot of those series, and it's just been fantastic. So while my bank account probably is angry at you all, I'm just really pumped to be back and enjoying comics. You've rekindled my love for comic books, so thank you. And keep doing what you're doing. It's great. Bye.
Oh, that just warms the heart. But I got to say, I love the idea of her pulling off to a rest area to read her comics. it's like an addict.
I want to know what the inexplicable chain of events are that led her to our show.
Exactly.
Like, how do you accidentally stumble into it? Like, she walked into her apartment with a lot of packages, and, like, she couldn't see, and she tripped over the cat, and she fell on the computer and somehow clicked, like, you know, brought up Revision 3 in our show, and what's this?
Who knows? Who knows? I'm not going to question it, but, so, Robin, we're glad to have you aboard. We were kind of off-air. We were discussing whether she knew this audio podcast exists, and we hope she does. But if you know Robin, tell her to listen to this. But
it's nice to hear somebody so pumped about it. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of energy that we sometimes forget being in it for so many years that comics are really fun and they're really good. So we're glad to be able to spread that to another person. So
absolutely.
Thank you, Rob. So all right, and in our last voicemail, I find a little vindication.
Hey guys, this is Tom O'Connor over in Redford, Michigan, a relatively new listener, and I originally called in to get all Purple Pants on Ron for picking X-Men 200 instead of the awesome Sinestro Corps, the pick of the week. But then once my anger subsided, I actually sat down and read the issue, and lo and behold, it's actually pretty decent. And this is coming from a guy who probably hasn't enjoyed an X-book in 15 years. So just wanted to let you guys know that it is safe to indeed drink the X-Men Kool-Aid this time around. The issue is actually fairly decent, so while I may not have picked it as my number one, it did get my number two. So other than that, keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening. Thanks. Bye.
Talk about some reluctant praise.
You know, if you people just listen to me and trust me, I know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this for a few years. I actually, you know, like, God, all you people, you're bashing on X-Men. God, it was a good issue. It was fun. So.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was pretty good.
So, I'm glad Tom didn't go all purple pants on me like he said.
Sinestro rocked the house, man.
So I got the thing. What I wanted to say about this voicemail is that what people don't realize and what we don't do is mention the fact that how close it is between what is actually the pick and what the runner-up is.
Oh, absolutely.
And if it was a photo finish last week on that, honestly, so I love the shit out of Sinestro because the Sinestro Corps. I read it like several times over after I read it the first time.
They should get to see us agonizing over the stack of books.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, so a lot of times it's not like, oh, that's obviously the one. Like, we mull and agonize and you know, talk to each other. Should it be this one? Should it be that? You know, like, it's a very difficult decision. So, you know, don't think that we just do it all willy-nilly and just go with what our heart says. You know, like, it. Like, and actually, if anything, all the crap I get about picking X-Men makes me not pick them. And I've got to fight that because then I'll be like, wait, I don't want external people to influence my decision and all that. You know?
Yeah, you've got to pick the best one. You can't go with what
it's crazy. So,
anyway. Your pick of the week, damn it.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. So if you have any comments on last week's X-Men 200 or this week's Uncanny or any other books or anything we talk about on the show, you can call in and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697.
Well, that's the show,
yeah.
World.
Don't forget to head over to ifanboy.com, check out the discussion there about this week's books. You can read Connor's review of the pick of the week and what other people thought were the picks.
Yep, and if you want to send us an email, you can do that at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any comments or questions or topics of discussion or anything you really feel like getting off your chest.
And as Robin mentioned in the voicemail earlier, we do a video show, which comes out every Wednesday around 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our friends at Revision3.com put it out for us. And if you also go to Revision3.com/iFanboy, you can find it. And we got a great show coming up this week. Some of you might remember us talking about going to Charlotte to go to HeroesCon. Well,
yes.
You can see what HeroesCon is all about. So, so check that out on Wednesday.
And if you want to tell us where you're from and show some pride, you can go to the Frapper map, which is frappr.com/ifanboy. You can stick your pin in the map,
which,
show us where you're from. And,
which we used to, you know, kind of give some shout-outs and stuff like that. I think we're going to bring that back in a couple of weeks because I've been playing with Frapper, and I think I figured it out now. And so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so stand up and be counted, folks, in the ifanboy.
Oh, so if we start bringing that back, I'm sure
it'll be fun.
That'll be a nice little retro twist to the show.
And also, if you like to play around on the interweb, you can go to myspace.com/ifanboy or comicspace.com/ifanboy, or you can go to Facebook and search for ifanboy, or you can go to verb.com/ifanboy and be our friends in all those various places.
Yes. And if you'd like the show, you can vote for us at Podcast Alley, or you can write a review on iTunes for either this show or the video show. We always like to hear the reviews and see what people write. Or you can tell your friends, tell your mom or your comic book store owner or your comic book reading buddy or your girlfriend or boyfriend.
Yeah.
And you can also go to dig.com in their podcasting section. And they've got a section there you can go and dig the show and dig the individual episodes.
And, yeah. And
the word.
Yeah, definitely. Any word spreading is much appreciated. And also, if you dig what we're doing, if you like what we give to you as product, you can head over to ifanboy.com/donations, and you can make a donation to the cause. We're working, you know, we got a lot of fun stuff lined up with the video show, and San Diego is approaching. And we got
keep your ears out for the San Diego stuff.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff going on in San Diego. So keep your ears and eyes posted for announcements in the next upcoming weeks about how you can interact with iFanboy if you're in San Diego. So
that's it for this week's show. But there's another show this week. If you saw Transformers like we did a Transformers special edition show, and that's on the feed.
Yep.
If you get the show off iTunes, you can go look back on the feed. It's right behind this one, or go right to ifanboy.com and directly download it there. But we did a special edition movie show on Transformers.
Yeah, be sure to check it out. The conversation about Transformers was interesting. So
it was very interesting. Josh is on that one. We're all three together for that one, and it's a very passionate discussion.
Yes, indeed.
At times. Yeah.
So all right, cool. Well, I'm gonna go read Marvel Adventures Spider-Man and get me some more Grey Gargoyle love.
You and your freaking Grey Gargoyle.
I don't know if Peter David knew he was French because there's not a French accent.
Well, that's how Chris Claremont writes.
Oh, I see.
Phonetically.
Phonetically, exactly. All right, cool. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.